mostly are beginners in Python. Who of you never used the Jupyter Notebook? Who is using Jupyter Notebooks less than a year? Okay, the most kind of use the Notebook. So you have everything you score. The recommendation. This will be a hands-on thing, so I will be typing, and you might type along or just watch, but typically it's typing. I try not to be too fast. If you have a problem, the assignment will help you look at your program, at the screen. You're supposed to install everything before, and if you start installing now, you're a bit too late, you will miss a lot. That's very unfortunate. But you can always look at here, and all this material in here, I will do exactly the same thing. But the whole information is actually, yes, if you want to do this, just copy and paste, which is not recommended. You want to have a muscle memory, just type it in. It's the muscle. Yeah? It doesn't work. Copy and paste in Stack Overflow, which is not a good method. Just retype all the stuff. Okay. First of all, you should create a new directory, maybe a new directory. I call it your site, Python 2017. You might call it Python tutorial or something. And then all this work out of this directory changes this directory. I'm using Kotlin and I made a new environment, which is Python 3.6. If you have environments, or even the nice environments, the environments, your environment. So the whole thing is you have to have Python school. I use Python 3.6. If you use the other version, it should be fine. You can still use legacy Python, it's just Python 3.7, it should work. Just a few different sizes of print, so I think that's Python 3.6 is recommended. So make a new directory, and then you type Python, Python should show up. That's the proof that Python is installed. There's not a very last version, it should update it, but it's fine. It's like 3.6 ones for this, sorry. But it doesn't matter for this purposes, and go out. And now we use Jupyter Notebook. So you type Jupyter, and then Notebook. It is called Jupyter Notebook. You might have done this already from other tutorials. And the thing is, you should be in this directory. You want to put the notebooks to end up, which is the easiest. So if you CD in this directory first, you just create it and then type to the notebook. And if everything is set up the right way, then the sort could start, and you should see something like this coming up in your directory. I have a file in there because I copied it there. There's a download. If you have made a new directory, this thing should be empty. It should be empty, and first we're going to work in the browser. Jupyter Notebook first, it works in the browser, and you're going to work in the browser. So everybody has this. Good. So I'm turn on full screen mode so you see more. And the first thing, you create a new notebook, and I have a bunch of different notebooks. You might only have one choice, that's a making Python notebook. And then you have a new notebook. You might have done this for other tutorials, I hope. Then it will be untitled, and that's an unfortunate name for a notebook. That's why the first thing will take a little. You can put whatever you like. I don't know, your intro or your free. And now, actually, this will be the file name, and if you type something like in here, %ls, which is one of this notebook magic, percent of integer magic, then you will see in here this file method intro extension IP1ND, which stands for IPython notebook. This Jupyter Notebook was IPython notebook before, but they changed the name because it's now a different programming languages. And therefore, they changed the name to Jupyter, we are the UI of Jupyter, Python.
Could you maybe increase the font size one step or?
Yeah, so
thanks.
So, you see, the problem is if it's big like this, and the same you know, is always changing the screen, and that's something like for easier. Okay, so that's a.
I looked at this menu and I looked at the input cell. But whatever I want.
Everybody has to know it's important, otherwise you Okay, now this is from the title. You see, that's a problem because always the main concern, otherwise, the driver creation doesn't jump around. You want to drop this matplotlib clip, and I just want to show you this. Matplotlib is a very, very good library. By the way, you can also not only Python, so this is going to be normal Python. So if I type shift enter, by the way, shift enter is a way to execute the cell. If you want to know more about it, there's a lot of help, and one of them is keyboard shortcuts. So I have a few keyboard shortcuts that gives you an overview of what all the keyboard shortcuts are doing. And the most important one is picking a shift enter, which is it says you have to press escape, actually shift enter, not enter. Then it's doing something. Run cell, select below, that's the shoot then. So I run cell and it creates a new cell. You have alt enter, then you integrate the cell normally. So this new one, the end, it creates one with shift enter if you doesn't have some directions. Okay. This really might look a different derivative of operating system. The shortcuts might look a different because you have different keys, macro like this one. Okay, you can also change the cell content. See, I turned off the header here actually, or the toolbar, and you can change the content here. I can say insert cell path, which is useful. That's also an equal shortcut, so it's game, and then you can change the mode to markdown, and then you can write something. And then we have this, which is markdown. Of course, I have markdown. Markdown is very easy. You can do like five different things, like a hashtag gives you a header for a photo, and you can make a nice notebook, and you can write your own presentation. So you're supposed to write your own notebook here. And now you can always have this. There's a shortcut. If I say SK6, then I get a markdown cell. This is a header of level 6, and now I have a level 6 header. Something like this, which is smaller than this. There's a maximum number of levels of headers that can have 6, so if they have some of them. So, to the open this rule. Good. We're going to spend most of the time in the IPython notebook. Matplotlib also works from the command line, or from the IPython prompt, or from other tools. The commands for Matplotlib are exactly the same, but when you run from the last thing will be an animation. The animation, as I programmed, it doesn't go from the notebook, it runs only from the command line. There's only like a command line, so you need to or something to edit your script if you want, and then you can run from the command line, that will pop up the window. Good. Let's get to work with Matplotlib. When you work with Matplotlib in the notebook, you have two different modes you can run it. There's another of these magic commands. If you type mat and then tab, it expands automatically. And I set the mode to inline. If you don't do this, you won't see an output. It will be empty. It will have something which is not nice. And inline means the output will be rendered as a PNG, as a picture. And you can see an output. And the first thing, of course, you have to do import. See, I'm always going to type in and then tab, it expands. So if you start typing something, and then the tab, it will integrate just its import, matplotlib, and you see, now I get a long list, dot, pyplot, as plt. That's a convention. You might think some of the conventions of pandas, NumPy is typically called as NumPy as np, pandas as pd, and this pyplot as plt is very common. Very often, when you see somebody give reference PLT, then you know it's a different matter. Matplotlib has different ways to work this. We use the simplest one first, the very interactive one. We will see later on there's a one that's more like object oriented, make objects and references. Here we just go through this. Let's just turn off the toolbar and the headers, and we get a bit more screen in a different place. Okay, that's the first thing. And now we can do a plot. And of course, we can also say import NumPy as a key, since we have NumPy. So who of you two follow NumPy tutorials today? So you know basic NumPy. If you don't have to use NumPy for MetaLib, MetaLib is still defined using Python lists, but NumPy arrays are different. So you can say x equals NumPy a range 2 to 11, which gives you a new array x, the numbers 2 to 10, so 2 inclusive, exclusive. And you can say y, and y is x squared, 1. And then you have y. You need some data. And now you can say plt dot plot, which is the simplest one, which produces a plot. If you don't do anything special, you get a line. Let's say x versus y, and when you do this, it plots. And when you turn and map the inline, then you see the other. You see, it returns. This thing is a return. You see, this is an other loop that works. You always get a return value. Not all my cells have return values. You notice, if you do assignment, there's no return value because I assign this return value to x. And this is a statement here. And then you have a statement like this, there's no output. If you have an expression, x in this case is an expression, or here, so then there's a return value, then we see the return value, which is specific for either interactive prompt or iPython for the notebook. When you write a program and do something like this, iPython will tell you that statement that seems that hack was not a program, this doesn't make any sense, just for right? Because it's just using object y and a reference and possible input, but here you see that. Okay, and then you see that's a list of line codes and you get the output. So you get a kind of a decent output, and the default is that all the axes are scaled in way. The default colors are changed with now. If you see some other tutorials and see some older blue and red colors, these colors are nicer, they changed this, so they did some research in color, how colors work, and they have the colors. This would be the simplest plot. And now the easiest way to experiment, you can do something with your plot. You can do something with your plot. That's my plot. And you can do different things. You can say plt dot, and you can say x label, for instance, which is a function. Don't assign. And when you assign the x label by accident, then it won't work as a function. And then you can write something by x as function. You see if I do this. Now down here, x. Again, plt dot tab gives you a long list, whatever possible. It's a long list, using this small icon, you can scroll down if you want. And most of the time, after a while, the name gives you a hint. If you don't know what things mean, just click on it with a question mark here, and then press shift enter, and then it gives you, it's not good string, it does not good that. Except to the next one, say y label dot string. There's a question mark, and then you get down here in a new window. By the way, if this is too small, you can also you can just click on this one. When you click on this one, it opens in a new window, yeah. And then it gives you the help. Yeah. So now I have to go back to my window, so I click on it. So this would be help. And by the way, if you do question marks, and if the source code is available, this is a pure Python module, then it can show you the source code, which is available right now, so if you want to. Source, and this is the source code, which doesn't give you much because it's just a short answer, but gives you the help also. So this is typically where it gives the help, and then it tells you something because the signature is not very nice. You might have given this a keyboard marks, it means it takes an unspecified number of positions and your keyboard arguments. And if you don't know what it means, so you get the signature, but then the help string tells you, I have something I can specify, font size and double alignment, vertical, and so on. And they have default values. All of them have useful default values.
I don't think the
Yeah, you have to set method with inline. Yeah, so you have to say, if you don't set inline, you set the back end. There are multiple back ends. So method supports GTK, WS, Python, G, and TK Inter as back ends for the three back end. You can have different backends. If you don't set the backend, it just plots it somewhere where it is. So it does not. So you have to set method inline. This would be the first mode. So
how old is the people in this class?
Yeah, you gotta do the three steps, the problem is four step us too. So, yes, that's a lot of ways you can change pretty much everything, but we have to find it. So, okay, so now I changed the y-axis and so on, so you can set a lot of these. And see, I make a new plot every time. And that's the advantage, I can just very quickly. So you have a title, title, and you can write something. Title then capitalized like in yourself. And you can do that if you want to. In strings typically, so if you know LaTeX, you put it all the way around, backslash, and then you can use math mode in LaTeX, and then you can use all this performance. And this would be just pi, like a clear pattern. But you can also use integrals and math mode supports. And work for anything that's a script. Title access, and a little bit of text you can write with the table. So this would be one thing, and then there's other options. You can say like plt.grid, which is also a function more. So the API admittedly is not very Pythonic. It's written by a person who does very efficient C++ programmer. And didn't use too much. And so the API doesn't. This would be a redone, probably that would look different, but that's the way it is. And now you have a grid. Okay, this would be the first plot, and it looks kind of decent already. And you can save it, so if you want to save it, you can save it. So far we only work with one. You see later on you can have multiple plots, so you can have explicit reference and different plots. Right now, you only have one active plot, and you have implicit reference to this. Whatever the plot is, because that's one. Now you can say save thing, and you can save your plot, and you can say, okay, my plot one. And typically you can specify the type, but you just write the extension and that's what we'll figure out what you want. So you can save the PNG or other formats, you can also save it as SVG. You can do this and you do LS here. So you see, I did LS with percent sign, which is a magic command. If I just type LS, there's no Python name defined as a name LS, and that will get I do the look of the form back as a looks for the percent LS. If you're interested what actually it's doing, then you can use history, something like this, 22, and that shows you the figure, so it's not this way. Input history, or input this 22. And you export it. So you can export the cell, and you can see actually that it says get itemize. And I wouldn't write how it works, but this ls actually translates to get itemize and call in the background to some Python. And then you see the input. And now we have this method. You can look inside this any behind the browser. You can also use the SVG, which would then be as a vector graphics. PNG is pixel, and you can also specify the UPI. So you can, if this is not big enough, then you can say PPI, and you can specify 100, 300, 600, 1200 PPI, so 1200 PPI. And then you have highest resolution. Of course, it doesn't make sense if you put SVG as an extension, then PPI, and then you better than for an extension. So now we have the plot saved. And that's also a good method. Of course, now if you want to save a lot of plots, you just write a loop, exchange the data, and save a bunch of PNGs. That's actually a good method if you want to make a video. That's probably the easiest one. Just make a directory and save your plots as 001, 002, 003, and so on. Then you set an impact. Just teach it together with the video. That's pretty easy. You can do it in 3 lines yourself, and then it has hundreds of options to make nice videos. Of course, you have to change the data to make your nice screens. Okay, this would be the basic plot. And keep it for now, and I just copy the whole thing. Now I'll show you a little bit how you can do more properties. So just over a grid. So you can also do a plot, And you can specify a label, which is a good idea, typically. You can say label. So I make this one, and I can make a second plot. So I basically just say OK. And I say OK, plus 20. It's a NumPy array, and I add plus 20. It adds 20 feature numbers. If you have a list, you cannot do this. You would need a list comprehension. So. And then, so, and when you do this, nothing changes, only that you have two plots, and see that it takes a default code, you change codes immediately later on. But now you can say plt.legend, and then it puts a legend right there. So you can specify a lot of options for the legend also, like the position and stuff. Here it puts a legend, and it takes a label. That's probably the best way of doing it, just label this box. And then you don't have to label it. You can also, if you will label it, explicitly give a list of strings to the legend, but then you have to take care that those names also apply to dots or that order is metal. Here you will buy it, you don't have to put the name there, that's all. So now let's change the mode now to see how this works. I can say matplotlib. Yeah. Notebook. We have another back end, and this is a specific back end. So when I copy my whole thing from here, just for didactic reasons, so I didn't give any root insert, which is tricky, but because I will upload this notebook later on, you'll get it. And then I do this, you won't see anything that's, I don't know, you have to do it, the whole thing again, you can go in again, shift enter, and then you see your problem. It's kind of a bug or something. It's something in the browser. So you always have to execute all cells twice. And you see it. I execute the cell, you see it. This is cell 26, this is cell 29. 27, 28 don't exist anymore. But they're not in the notebook, but they're still in the history, by the way. Yeah. So yeah, if you look in the history, if I look at the history, then you can find all these inputs that are still there, as long as the code is alive. But the cells don't exist in the notebook anymore. And then you change it successfully and execute it twice, then you should see something like this. So that's an interactive mode. And now we have a bunch of buttons start here. And this is, if you go over them, wait for a few seconds, then you see a help. We have zoom, and you can zoom in. For instance, if I click on it, then the cursor changes, and now I can zoom in. See, if I, since I the default for the location of the legend is best, now I changed my plots, and now my line, this orange line here, would go right through the legend. That's why the legend is moving to a different place. And then you have this one, this is pen, which means now the cursor changes. If I move it around, you see now the legend is jumping around because it has a location best, it always finds a way where it doesn't. And get cut by a line. So sometimes, if everything before the line obviously doesn't work, then there's no way to put the legend. You can also place a legend outside if you want. You
have sorry, could you explain how to get to this point?
Yeah, so you have to go here and execute the cells twice. Shift enter, shift enter, go up there, shift enter, shift enter. Otherwise, you can see why. So you need a, typically, if you're Windows, you have Internet Explorer. It might not, everything might not use Firefox. Firefox works, Firefox, Chrome, work, Edge, might work, I don't have my computer. I know Internet Explorer, you always have to click in the cell again. Here I can just type, when I come to the next cell, Internet Explorer, you have to move the mouse to the cell. Somehow it doesn't activate the next cell for some reason. So my experience, Firefox and Chrome and Windows is better. So far, I mentioned Windows. So you need a kind of a recent browser that supports sockets, web sockets, and all the browsers that are kind of useful. You should use a good browser in general. And why is it this? So this is interesting, but you see, you can also now click. If I can click on this one, then it stops interaction and it freezes a picture the state you zoomed in. So you can work with it, and okay, now I want this, now you have this picture, and it freezes right there. So that's pretty nice. Typically, I prefer this inline one because it's a bit, otherwise, you always, if you don't close this and do now point plots in this old window, the parameters old window, they change the old one, which is kind of different workflow. So typically, I prefer inline for experimenting. If you want to zoom in, you can also do this. So now you have a decent plot already. So I go back to my inline mode. You don't have to, you can keep it, but typically it's a bit easier to, because I make cell after cell after cell. So you see what I have here in my script. Okay, there's a bunch of other things we can do. So we have this plot here, and I just keep copying. So of course, otherwise, if you're looking, I change the cell again and again and again, you can see that. So you can specify the properties. Properties are very important. In a very short way. So the name matplotlib, mine has it comes from MATLAB. MATLAB is a commercial package that's used a lot in numerical computing. Since quite a lot of courses, so people have changed MATLAB. And therefore, a lot of things are very similar to MATLAB. So if you're a MATLAB user, you can see a lot of similarities. And the easiest way to specify properties of a line is a string. There are other ways of doing it. So the easiest way would be to say, I want to have a red line. So if you put it on, there are many different ways of specifying colors. The simplest one would be one letter, but that's only like 5 or 6. But now you see, it's red. It used to be blue. And now, it's red. The next one changes blue, that they have some kind of scheme there. See, okay, this is red. The next one, I don't know if I'm going to use color again. Zero. This would be one. And then you can also specify that you want to have a dashed line. That's a, if you look at the documentation, there's a long table of symbols you can have. Many, many different symbols.
And I call them the dotted line, dashed of the black line.
You can do something like this, now you get a dashed line. And you can also add the markers. So you can have a symbol for the markers, like a plus. Let's make the lowercase o makes a little circle. Now you get the marker at every place where you have a data point. Created numbers 2 to 11, which is 9 numbers, and you should see 9 points. If you have many points, you can also just also mark every. There's many, many more arguments. This line can be much, much longer. You can achieve the same thing. Being more explicit, say color. Now you can set a color, which you could say, okay, I want to have yellow, and now it makes yellow pieces. It's kind of yellow. Looks more yellow. So that's one way of doing it, but you can also say light. This color digests a lot of different inputs, and one of them would be there's like 8 or 4 names. These are typically the names. There's also some documentation, but the names we would be Wikipedia, which are defined in HTML as color names, and we just use the words like crimson, or that's sometimes very long color names I never saw before. That would be one way to specify it. But you can also specify a tuple with this RGB. So if you don't want to find it explicit, you'd like to find a calculated color. Then you just add tuple, you say 0.5, and it should be kind of range. And so now I have 50% relatively different RGB green and blue. And you don't have to change the numbers between 0 and 1, but you can change the color. So if you make the one out of it, then you get blue on. Because now the blue is 1 and the other ones are half, and so on. So you can mix the color. But you can also use a hex string, like you see CSS, they are commonly. So you use a hex string, which is exactly the same as this tuple, just a different formatting of the numbers. And then you can these 3 or 4 different ways to specify a color can be used anywhere other than I use. This is more object-oriented. You use a keyword argument. There's a keyword argument. So if you look at the plot, there's many, many optional keyboard arguments. Or the short way would be using this kind of cryptic string. The post ways are possible. And you can also actually, when you add the plot, add properties later. So that's one way of adding properties. I'm fast just raise your hand, this is supposed to have a photo wrong. And I copy the whole thing. So you can do a few things. So yeah, I didn't.
Yeah. I have a question concerning the scale of the correction show.
Yeah.
So my guess is that it's chopped into pieces and then processed
for
different purpose. Can you somehow configure the wrong thing by doing that? So is it sometimes easier to make the explicit statements, makes it hard to do whatever?
It's easier to read. So if you, this is something if you play with the active you run too fast. Then you see that. That's my take. Like, so you use it, then you would interactive, you do some quick and dirty, and you look at the output of the thing, and you know what you're doing. That's okay. If you want something that is a little longer, use the keyboards. That's what I would use. So it's a bit more typing, but it's easier to read later. Unless you do a lot, and you depends on the audience. If it's just for you or some other people that use MathLab a lot, then the screen might be okay. If you give somebody that doesn't know much, the keyword argument is much easier just because there's core and you know that, that must be a core.
My question was more about, is it in the background always only one solution?
Yes, that's true. If it doesn't work, it gives an exception that there's no option for this.
Okay.
So there's unique symbols for the marker, they are unique only for markers, there are unique symbols for the lines, and for the letter, for the colors always the letter. But there's no R for marker. So that's the unique. You can actually change the order. There's no problem, you can do whatever you want. Make cycles. They told you to change the order because each sign is unique as well. If you put something that doesn't exist, then you get an exception that comes on and tells you unrecognized character R strings and gives you exception. Exception for example, it's you did something wrong, not exactly what, but at least it tells you the R is wrong. So the R is wrong, so you change the R. That's easy. So you're totally free to use the order, whatever you like. So there's always a thing I mean, once I think you rotate it, but it's kind of implicit. Or you want to have more explicit. This would be more Pythonic. Yeah? So it was, you might know this, that explicit doesn't implicit somewhere then. Yeah. And that's what you use. And also should be one, and obviously one way to do it, so it should be one, and probably only one obvious way to do it, and not that we have at least 10 ways to do it. And always surprised that somebody has to check yet another way to do the same thing. Because you have so many options to put this together. Okay, now that's what I did here. And now there's many different ways to get the explicit reference. I didn't do it, I threw away the reference, but you can also say an axis is a PLD get current axis. This is a very MATLAB-like command. And now I have this axis. So, I can delete the server, by the way, escape db. This is a trick for the end users or end users. And then I have AX, which is my axis. And now I can rotate this axis. And I can actually. This would be one way of doing it, the other way actually would be better. So if I add a plot, so I would say here, lines 1. Yeah. So this always gives you back a list of plots, because you can actually, instead of this, okay, let's go like this. See now, lines 1, if I do this, then lines 1 is a list of plots, and I did added only one. You can also add two plots. You can say plot. I could use two plots in one, say x, y plus 20. That's what I did before. So you can plot it like this. You see now, let me say here two plots. Now I get a return, I get a distance 2. So you can add plot two of them. The problem is if I use keyword arguments, both of them will get the same. I can use different colors, at least not in this way. You can use a string though, but you can use a color key. Of the label, you can label that because we have one label. I'm sure you can try this. So, yeah.
Could you show again how to get the objects?
Yeah, so when you say plot always returns a list of plots, it would be easy. So I didn't bundle it, just show the way, but you can get a reference to this. Yeah. So plot returns a list of plots. In our cases, list contains only one element, but still a list. So now, if you want to have the plot, you just do your normal list operations, and now you reference, now you get it. Okay, plot, so this would be my plot P. So I'm lazy, I just use P. So now I'm at P. And I copy this in one step. I just copy this because this gets kind of a see what I'm doing. So I have P. And now I can say P dot set underscore and then tab. And that gives me a long list of stuff that I can do. So all this, most of the objects have a set underscore something method, many of them. and these are kind of created dynamically more or less, and then it tells you what you can set. So you can say like set column, and now I can set the column. Something. Now, you see, I did something, but something is not right. See, now my nice plot is green, but there's something wrong with my plot. Who sees what's wrong with my plot? So with the legend is still red. Because it prints a legend with red, and then later on I change the color and makes it red. It doesn't make any sense. So, rule of thumb, always put the legend at the end, otherwise you might end up with error strings, and now this is the way it works. It doesn't undo it at all. You have to unpaint it. It's just once you select a piece, once you write on a piece of paper, it's there. It's erased in this case. So you have to be careful. So rule of thumb, always put the legend plus. Otherwise, the legend might not go in. It doesn't make a lot of sense, actually, what I did here, to set the color right here and then to set the color green. In most cases, so it's
but that's a
6-line
equal, right?
Yeah, so when I create this plot, it returns a list of all plots. In this case, this list contains only one plot. Yeah, so this returns a list. And I call this one lines one. So because every plot will be a line, and this is the first one with the plots. And here I just access this normal indexing in Python, the first one, which gives me the first plot, which is P, and this P, once you execute the cell, you can see P dot, and it gives you a long list, so you can set something, and I can change the property of P. And here I say, okay, make it dot green.
So when we have multiple plots in the same line, in the single lines, and then we have
yeah, so that's what I did up here. So if you have multiple, now you say, okay, this is my lines. Yeah. See, now it's lines. That would be one way of doing it, but you could also say line one, comma line two, which is two unpacking, which would, now, this one, this assumes that this plot returns exactly two. If it returns only one or three, we get an exception. So now I have this two unpacking thing, and then you can say line one plot set something, and you can say set line style, yeah? And I can say line style column, and now change the line style, which is the column is made for the line words. To get this, the problem is if I define line 1 and line 2 without executing the cell, let's say line 1 to dot, you don't see anything, we have to execute the cell first, so the kernel knows that object exists. That's a bit strange with a notebook. You always have the notebook itself, which is in the browser. We have a kernel that follows the command line. And if you don't execute the cell, the kernel doesn't know anything. So I can type, like all the markdown cells I type, the kernel doesn't know anything about it. It only knows about the Python commands. And if I don't execute the cell, meaning when I type in here, if I do something like this, the kernel doesn't know yet because there's no number. Only when I execute the cell, you see a number, which is indication that it's selected, then the kernel knows. Therefore, markdown cells, as you can see here, they don't have a number. Because the kernel doesn't know about it. It is not the by the line number for this, but it's not just sort of line numbers. But there's no in number, and therefore, if there's no in number, the kernel doesn't work. So if I turn a proof on, you have three different types of, four different types of headings actually marked up, which is a subset marked up. Code, which is the port, which is Python in this case, could be something else. If you use a different programming language. And so the Jupyter Notebook supports about 60 languages, so you should find any useful language. There should be a kernel. So I use it from Haskell, there's very good Jupyter, kernel, yes, you can see it, find whatever, whatever it does. Yes. And then the code will be in its language for sure. And you have markdown, you can have raw, which is just text, doesn't do anything. And markdown and raw with numbers inside. So everything you can do is a toolbar on the menu, you can do this shortcut somehow. You see now this is a wall and if I have a shift enter, yeah. But it doesn't send it to the phone because it's just the output or something. Maybe it doesn't, but it's not Python, so it doesn't get executed. Okay. Now we have our cell, and we can set properties. That's one way of doing it. And just for completeness sake, you can also say plt dot set property, and then you can hand in the object, and then you can say, okay, I want to set something else, and I can say Markov. Style, I guess, mono style is plus, and then
lines.
P, it should be P. So, and it's easy. But now it's just, I forgot the thing. Second. No more. So now it's plus, but mono style mono. So here, obviously, because it uses a strange arcs. If you look at PLT, that's a problem. Just why it's like this. If you say set P, question mark, yeah, you see this arcs and keyboard arcs, which is very unfortunate for help because I take any position, any keyboard arguments, it doesn't help. Yeah? So that's why this program, the program help would give you the signature, and if there's nothing, there's nothing to help. And you have to reach through here. The properties are, but they actually are the same as if you look at your line 1, P, dot set, underscore, and everything after the underscore is typically what you can supply there to keyboard. You have to go around. It's not very personic, it's just like you supplying yourself as a. So just for completeness sake, maybe you want to do something like this. Who knows? So the property is very important. Now you can make quick, useful plots. And the problem is there are many, 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 many objects. Hundreds of objects for many of these. Nobody really can remember all of them. Typically, you don't want to have 150 types of plots. You want to have a few plots you need. You have to find out the options once and then. You know, and I myself always have people do my own scripts for that. We just go what options we need to go for because they don't use all the time, just gaps. But the way typically things work, so you go and I make them look, I go to this NetPerfect website, NetPerfect.org, yeah, and now I can make this. So, and the best, nicest tab here is gallery, and if you go to gallery, then you see hundreds and hundreds of plots. And that's what I call example-driven programming. So you go in here, and you look at something what you want, like this. Yeah? So you go in here, and you see this is a plot, two sine functions on top, and they're transparent, and they show you the code. You will find different styles. So this is sort of things are contributed, but different people you find quite different styles how to do it. than I showed you. So they use the first, this is just putting the data, you use linspace, which is yet another way to make data. So he says, I want to have everything from 0 to 2 times pi. This 500 steps, so it's on the right range. You get 500 data points in this range from 2 from 0 to 2 pi. And then you, y1 is sine x, and y2 is sine 3x. That's it. See, now this is a subplots, which is some different way, yet another different way to create a plot I can show you. This one gives you what's called a figure, we'll come to a figure. And it gives you an axis, and then you have this axis, and you can say axis hill. So far we used only plots, but there are many different other plots you can use. And you can say axis hill, and it fills it, and you say, okay, I want to fill between x and y1, which is blue, and x and y2, which is red, and the alpha point 3. So alpha means transparency. If you put alpha 1, then everything is opaque. If you put alpha 0, then you would see anything. And make kind of pastel like
colors. Can you use the subplot as a method for making several plots?
Yeah, you become the subplot. So you can use subplots if you want to have many plots arranged like in a table-like fashion, then you use subplots. Mm-hmm. You can add as many subplots as you like. Here it makes only one subplot. So far we just use plot, which makes subplot 1, 1, 1. So far we focus on one. So you can have many subplots. And you can also, if you like, use a concept called axis, so you can place a plot whatever you like. The subplot makes it very nice in the grid layout. Okay, so the easiest thing is just copy this one. So I don't need the import anymore. So now the problem overrides my x. Here, it overrides my x. I just can call this x2, and this x2 does override my x next time I'm going to plot something. So, if I do this, by the way, this PLT show I don't need here. This is needed when you run it as a script, when you run it from the command line, you copy this into a file, you need this PLT show, otherwise, nothing shows up. But now, I'm going to do something like this and get the error because I forgot to put x2 here. Now, this. X. So I mix it for that, I rename my x, so I put it in one place, x, x2, x2. Okay, so if I change all my x, x2, just I don't want to write x, then you see, I get this plot. And now you can drop your written there. You have a kind of feature, and you have this one. Now you can experiment. So if I set it to 1, the alpha, which is very nice, then everything's okay. If I set it to 0, then it goes to another. It's totally transparent. Go to one, you still see something. So you can see it correctly. If you said go to 9, that would be. You can see it. Trying through. So here, since I have two plots, I get the same alpha proportion. That means you want to have different alphas, then you would have to make two fields on top of this also. But if I and they use a sheet, they use a string, and this string refers to the first plot, and this string refers to the second plot. And also there's other different plots. You can have different kind of tables for pretty much everything. And there's many more plots, so if you go back, you just scroll through, and there's hundreds and hundreds of all types of plots, so you want to get an overview of line styles, and there's always a source code type of plots. Yeah? And you discover plots, you can also draw stuff, and on. A lot of statistical plots, histograms, violin plots, box plots, all kinds of stuff that you can do. And yeah, histograms again here. And there are simple plots and pretty sophisticated plots. You can also work with these pictures, like a photo, and you can say, okay, cut it circle. That's command, cut it circle. It's used to be on the photo, you just make it round, because you cut it sometimes. And so then you have different types of interpolation, that's even booklet points included. You can have steam plots, flow or something. It's pretty interesting. This is nice, playing pie chart, you see. So you have this micro, and you see that it's loaded, and that's it. This is the first one, it's just the data, so you have to have the data somehow. within the labels, the sizes, and then you see this explode, this makes this orange yellow thing here come out. So you have explode if you like, and then you just, you say pi, again make subplot say pi, and then you say explode labels. Here you can specify the format, and they use this percent style text formatting, you might know, string formatting. And since you want to have the percent sign, you have the escape percent sign, hence the double percent here. Yeah. That's the way it works. And this means I want to have a 1.1, so one digit long and one less percent thing, which makes sense. And then inch, dot, angel, and also you have to set, if you don't set it, then equal, you get the egg. That's what, you want to have a round, typically, that's why you just set x and y. Otherwise, it kind of scales it, and then you get this kind of funny shape. And so, yeah, you can find your way out, can play around with it, and you get this kind of place. Of course, you can also set alpha and make it spirit, and all kinds of stuff. So you just do the same thing. The same pattern, once you have this, you can typically guess the names. So that's pretty much it. And there's many more. Pretty sophisticated, this is nice, so you can, as I said, you can use. I'd like it here, and you can make a mathematical formula. This is just right there. Here, that's it. You typically use a raw string, because you have to use backslash, and if you don't use a raw string, you might end up with like four backslashes, which is not useful. Or sometimes one, two. But if you use the wash when you can say the radius 2, not if you use 4, which means around. So most of the time, maybe you have a mark on this off, here you make the wash. Okay. That's a property, so you put it in a little quicker. Okay, so that's the basics. A few more things I would like to show you. It's how to put text, how to put ticks very quickly, and then how to arrange subplots. These are the main features. Okay, so text, SK2, gives you this one. There are different ways of putting text. So I make a very simple plot. So it's stripping away everything we did so far, just x and y, which might be my plot. Yeah. Again, you see the return value as we have to this. This is the object. You see this return value comes back. If you don't assign it, by the way, if you don't like this output, that's a good usage of the semicolon, because the semicolon adds a new line at the end, and then that would be a return value, and then it's a plus sign. It let you write a percent, you know, we always have this noise in there. Then you add a new line at the end. Typically, you can always go without the semicolon. Sometimes you need to put a Python script. Where only one line fits, and you need a multiple line to make use of. But it's an implication that we humans don't want to use text. It's just for somehow we like a fetch byte. Okay, there are different ways of writing, putting text. So you can say PLT, each dot text. And there are different coordinate systems. I have a list here, there's like 5-6 different coordinate systems, basically tips, basically data, there's some chaos. So we have actually two main ones. One is the data, so that means my coordinate system goes from 0 to 10, yeah, or from 1, whatever it's here, from 2 to 10, and from 0 to 100. And the other one will be the figure, and the figure will be the whole thing. Here you don't see the figure too much. If you do it on the command line, this will be the window that pops up, that will be a figure. And that list goes from 0 to 1 and 0 to 1. So we always start 0 in the lower left hand corner. So it's a coordinate system as you see it here. As opposed to some geometries, we typically have 0 on top left. You print the page, it makes sense. If you want to draw some data, typically you want to down there. You have to be careful, but otherwise you wipe it. Okay, you have text, and you can say I want to have some text at position 5 and position 16. Yeah. And you see, it puts the text right there. And now it actually makes sense to go back. Escape A, choose the cell, go back to Matplotlib notebook mode, do the same thing, now it works for the first time, and now I can do this pen, you see if I pen around, so now I put my text here, this, data botnets, and that's why when I move around, it moves around. Of course, that's it. Okay. This is different from what's called a figure text, fig text. You can specify. Yeah. Now I have to put from 0 to 1 from 0 to 1. So if I say 0.2 and 0.6, of course you can supply font and proper sizes and colors and all kinds of stuff. If I do this here. Now you see, if I do the spanning again, you see the figure text stays put because the figure doesn't change. I change the location of the coordinates, and that's why the text moves around, but the figure text stays there. But then you can also place figure text outside of these coordinates. So I can say something like this one point. It's supposed to show up somewhere here. Maybe it doesn't work as well. Let's do this inline. That's what I used to do this. Yeah. And then you can place text outside. Yeah, see here? You do this, now you see it's outside because now I'm 10% outside of the control. It works here. It might not make sense. If it's outside the window, it's there, but you don't see it. That's not here, you can see it. The problem is when you save it as a figure, it might not show up, but there might be an option to set a finger. I'll see it over this. Yes, wait. So something you can be careful. And then you calculate something like this and you go outside. This could be something if you want to place a legend outside. Because typically that before the legend is placed inside. But if it covers a lot, you can put it outside and make your space bigger than the space. You will find recipes on it. That's text. And yet another way of doing text. Yeah, another way is annotation, so I can have an annotation. And the annotation I have to add to. So now this would be the way to get the access which I had before. I said here to get access to the thing. This is the other one, they have this access here, that's this access thing. They edit. That's all nice. Okay, you see, they say subplots, you get an explicit reference to the figure, so you can do something with the figure object, which is a background, you can use a background for something. And this would be the axis. So the figure is a whole thing, the axis is my thing that I can plot it. You can have multiple axes. Yeah, subplot. It's like a subplot. The things. Yeah, the axis and axis. And the zero on the floor is kind of a little strange in the program. Get it? Get current axis. It's one thing. Turn it into accuracy. So now I have it. And now I can say axis annotate. And I can annotate something. So again, now I go by. I have to check myself. Now it's different. The other ones have a coordinate source and then text. This one has a text source and then coordinates for some reason. Okay. Important. Mm-hmm. And then you can specify two locations. You can specify location of text, and you can specify location of the arrow. As you see, it's the location. So the arrow should point at x, y, and you specify two coordinates. And let's say I want to have it 6 and 35. Because you can calculate this one, 6 and 35. So 6 is x, 35 is y. And then you have x, y, text. So those would be different coordinates. And you can specify where you want to have text. So let's say I want to have 6 and 8. And 20. And then you can have the arrow properties, arrow prop, and this is finally known as the dictionary stuff. Of course you have to have some sort of keys in there, but otherwise that makes sense. And one of them is face color. And again, there's a long list of prop, so yeah, face color. Typically you can use English, American, and British spelling.
Props, not props.
Yeah. And then I say red or blue or something. Yeah, you see now it puts it. Yeah. And just if you look at this gallery, instead of having, you can have other properties, you can have totally different arrows that have totally different shapes. But this can be useful. So if you're able to calculate this important point yourself, then you can put this arrows automatically or something. Just a bit. So you can, again, you can make it much longer, it can be 10 lines long, and specify all kinds of stuff that you can use. So that's the text, of course. As I said, you can always mark more. You have to put some valid stuff in there, not in Russia. By the way, in Python 3, you can do the same thing. Python 3, all Unicode, most of the Unicode characters are the Python names. And notebook has something interesting. If you type something like this and then you press enter, it translates it to something like this. Of course, you don't have to find a way to input this thing. It's just the input thing. But now you can use the same thing, and you can. So if you really want to write, you're free. So if you want to, you can write the source code in Chinese. You have to wait to begin to stop it. And then you can write Chinese. Or you can, French, you can put all your nice accents, put them here, if you want to. Mm-hmm. Or Germans are in the open lines. There are other sources. Okay. And this is just a way, but this is just what you can use in any editor. It doesn't have to be a notebook. As soon as you change the input the Unicode character, if you want to use it, it's a different question. So if you have a very mathematically inclined audience development, that might be okay. If you have normal audience in the normal library, I don't know. So other people might make the input thing they can just copy paste, which is a very annoying program. I always get people, emails from people that have names, I can type the characters over the code. Okay, that's something you can do. That's text. I would skip now, the next one. So that you can cover the fix. Maybe more important is the subtle concept. That's called the subtle concept. But the material, it's much longer than 1.5 hours, but the thing is, as you see, there's many, many details. Might get something wrong. So. Subplots. And I'll show you how to make subplots. There are different ways of creating subplots. So we can actually add subplots. I can say plt dot subplot. And so far what we did, so implicitly, 1, 1, 1, we mean create one row, one column, one subplot. Or subplot number one. This would be an empty. But you can also say, I want to have two rows, three columns, and I'm going to have plot number one. This would be plot number one. To call the sub one. So now, you can also copy it, okay. This would be sub six, but it can be more than six, 2 times 3 is 6. Now, you will see pretty much how this works. You see, this is number one, this is number six. Let's put another one between and you see how this works. So you can, either put a comma, or you can put it together. As long as it's one digit, then you can put it together. Let's say number three. Let me do the same thing. Obviously, it's more than 9, then you can get you to comma. And now, you can count. This is 1, this is 2, you don't have to plot it. This is 3, this is 4. And you see, you can write a loop, and you can create, you can have plots. And of course, you can plot them. You can say, okay, sub 1 dot plot x1. Now, everything we did, you can do for the children's subplots. Of course, you need to write a function, just run to the function and you can do the same. So you can write a loop and you can generate everything. You see this here, it's not very nice if you have money, but they have an overlay for some reason. Typically, what you want to do, I don't know why it's not before, you say tight line layout, you do tight layout, then it looks nicer. You see there's more space here because you have money, the overlay. You tight layout is doing good. There's also some options you can turn off. You can turn off the labeling just by assigning an empty list. So if you have exactly the same scale for all of them, which is not the case here, then you might just have keep the left one here, only down one here, in terms of all the numbers, the exact same. But that's an option. You can get back if it's the first column, the last column, the first row, the last row, and then you can. Of course, now once we can write the loop, you can generate as many posts as you like.
Yeah. Once we are defining using the same variable on subfix and outwriting it, I mean, it seems to work, but I think if you want to access the second part, that might be troublesome.
I think that's supposed to
be. I mean, I don't know.
That was a mistake, thank you. It didn't have an impact. If I would have tried to plot, you would see it. So now you could write the loop, whatever you like, or use the generator if you're more fancy, the same thing, use the loop and do everything the functional style, more or less. But that's something you could do. So you could just say rows equals 2, columns equals 3. Row in rows, or column in a range, of course, yeah, range. Range, rows, the problem is, Python starts counting 0, here it starts with 1. What would be a good solution? Probably you could say row index, and you don't need the row anymore. You can say range rows. I would give it ugly. Okay. Just making this ugly, as you can see. So range, you could just enumerate, but you don't need rows, so you need to enumerate 1 to 1. Make a simple one, and now you can plt.subplot, and you put in the row and the column, row, column, and now for simplicity, I thought when all of them the same thing, you don't have to. X and Y. And Y doesn't pop on the
I think it's up to these rows and columns, like plural.
Yes, of course.
No, no, that's up plus. You used row and column the first two entries, and I think you need rows and columns in the subplot function. Not those ones, the ones left of it, like the first two entries.
Rows doesn't be six, and this should be rows plus one should be six.
So plus rows, columns, and rows.
Yeah. Let's say rows.
And here you use all these different rows.
I must be 9.6.
So the first two arguments to subplot have to be the total number of rows and the total number of columns.
The other way around. So.
Yeah. And the calculation afterwards to get the
rows. Yeah. Rows, columns, and that should be the counter. So make it easy now, just for now.
So row times calls plus call.
Okay, yeah. Row times calls plus call.
rows. Plus.
Row times column.
Plus column.
Row times columns.
Make it easy.
Zero.
And plus. Okay, see, you have to think three ways. So if you talk to the program at the same time, it's not a way to solution. Okay. But of course, you have to, you see already, it doesn't look nice. So that's if you want to use your tight layout. TRT. Tight layout. Tight layout. Oops. Yeah, now it's nicer. And of course, you can have a different plot. Look at now, I have different, you look at the scale now, I have different scales. 100, 200, 300. No, it's just not that wide. Of course, you could have, also have different colors. But just have RGB in there and so on. This would be something. And if you want to now change it and say, okay, I want a few more rows, and then it should hopefully. Yeah. Now we have to fix this. So, you can be flexible, and then, and you can make it nice. This would be something typically, maybe generate also sometimes using this ending to generate the next next one. I can end the generator. Now, the tools, counter, next, do the same thing then with that would not make it. But if people don't know about the tools, counter is then this end generator, it's more explicit. And once you have figured this out, now you want to move it into a function. This would be, of course, now something that you can do in function, and you could probably have this drop function to use it. So that as an example. So now make it a bit nicer. So a bit, then say, okay, I want to have the plot many rows. Holds and function is still you can have the function inside, but you subscript plot you call it this dead attribute. But yeah, so but this will make it a little more useful. Now we have the function. Yeah, and then I just say plot many and this mass. Plot many. And for super arguments, make it explicit so you don't know about, you don't remember the rows and scores and colors. And then, and exactly the same thing, but put it in the function. And now, it always uses plot, but instead of plot, you could specify what it's supposed to do. So you could say something like this. Plot equals plot. And then you could do something. Look at this elegant. And then you should do the same thing, hopefully. Yeah. And now you could say, okay, I want to have a different plot. And I don't know what would be a good plot, so let's try it out. Stop. Dog. You need something that takes X and Y. Semi-log right. Yeah. So now we get a semi-log right plot, x is sure. Of course, I am moving the plot. So instead of using x and y, I want to have this semi. Now you see the axis is, now my y-axis is logarithmic and my x-axis stays, you know, because it is. Of course, now you use both, it has to take x and y. It means a pie chart and it doesn't know which x and y. So it might be a better way just using a string. But the string has to be something that's better. But now we can just go through all the strings and have the names and then and you do a nice
top string always. Something like this, and then we have more details. Yeah? So now you have a kind of reusable thing, and if you want to put 100 of these new work, you won't see anything, you take a while. Good. That's a subplot thing. So that's also an access thing we tested now. You can do those access that can place plots by the line, which is useful if you want to have like a zoom or something. Specify. Good. So, I have one more thing I would like to show you, which is a bit different and a bit more sophisticated. That's why I gave you the source code. And you want to do an animation. One thing is you can do animations. The simple thing is if you run a post-mortem animation like a simulation, as I showed you, the simple thing is save fix, save everything as a PNG, and use FMPEG decision file. That's by far the easiest way of doing it. Because then FMPEG has hundreds of options. You can have between the frames, you can have effects, and you can have the time between frames, and you can put some parameters and so on. But if you want something live, then an animation would be nice. So, now, let's go to the console, to the terminal. So inside the console, I gave this download link, so if you haven't downloaded yet, please do so now. Up there, you will find this animation.py file. But this use case, I just explained a little use case, so you can see what animation is all about. So the thing is, we have this old Fortran program that's numerically fine, but spits out a lot of information to the screen, and one of the information is the residual. So the error it makes, and this error should become smaller. And you always have to go to the screen and look at the screen with numbers and see if the number gets smaller over time. So I wrote a program that starts animation, often program background, how does the screen output, and it looks for this number, and then it places the number in the nice image. So you see this number live moving. So this is challenging. You have a number that's produced all the time, and at the same time you want to display, which is called concurrent programming. And as soon as things get concurrent, it gets automatically more complicated. Post-mortem, indeed, you have all the data and put it in. That's it. Here, it's a bit more complicated because I want to do something like this. And first, we look at the result of the animation, and then we look at the source code. It's a bit more involved, so, but you might test it. So hit type Python, and then animation. And then it should actually from my environment. And then if you do this, then this one shows up. And this is an animation. As you can see here, this is a number of steps. So this simulation steps is shown down here. And there's a residual. You see it starts at about 10,000. There's a big error in the beginning. Then over time, you get an output, and this output is the trend is going down, but in between it is one closer to the target. So you have this, you see this one is always changing. Now I'm here at 1. And after a while it will be 0.1. But I use also this is semi log here, so I use a scale. Power of 10, so it's easier now, it's 0.1. Yeah. If I have 10 to minus 7, I move the pitch. Since I use random number to random runtime. So this is just an example, but you can do now this. In the background, there's a calculation that uses a number at the same time that this number is created, I plot it. So this is concurrent programming, which you can do with threads, but I don't use threads, I use built-in multi-chain function. So you cannot plot and get the same number, of course, as soon as you plot actually blocks, you can do anything. Yeah. So that's why you need this way to put. But the same principle could be applied for other animations. Like you could have a pause going up and down, you could have a circle, you could have like a speed meter, after you can draw in the command is the chain code. Now for a while, now it will be finished. Okay, let's have a look at the source code. That looks like that, you can see how the animation works. So you can use an editor, but you can also load the source code. You can just load function, load, animation, which when you type it, the load, it doesn't execute, but that doesn't. Okay. This is, if you still use Python 2, you should always do this. But this run with Python 2, this Python 3, I like the process. Great process. Okay. This is a main thing down here. See, this animation is important for Matplotlib, and I make a fun animation. So I need to provide functions, and these functions will be called by Matplotlib. So that's a typical thing when you do convert programming. You cannot act yourself. You have to give somebody a function that they call in Google Hub to act for you. Yeah? That's like a fallback function. And that's important, but otherwise it doesn't work, because as soon as you say .show, the whole thing blocks. And I can do anything, you do only method that takes over, and I give it a function in method that is good. That's what I have here. First I give it a figure, which is just clock since the project end up. Then I have two functions. This is a function that consumes, and then creates a block. I have to write myself. And this frames is something that produces the numbers. So if you do a post-mortem animation, it can be just a list of numbers. So the simplest way would be just a list of numbers. But here we can use it because we don't know the values yet, they will produce on the fly. So I have to give the object that reduces one number at a time. Like in the label, you say next, and the next one. And then you can specify the interval, say every, that's a millisecond, or every second there should update. And that's it. But now, so all this programming is here. You see, residual and graph are actually two instances. Typically, people use functions, use globals. I don't like globals, that's why I don't use functions. I use classes that behave like functions, which you can do by only call. And it's more encapsulated, everything. There's no global, everything is just your instance. And you don't need globals. Actually, global people don't need anything, you always find a way. Okay, so now I have two things. This is just a mock. Instead of running the Fortran program, I have this one which produces numbers. And you see I have this call here, which will be called. So it behaves like a function. And that's producing just random numbers. It's just some functionality, and produces random numbers. And you see here, I count. It counts to zero. And I go up and down. See, I count up once, and down twice, because I check if the count is two, I add. Otherwise, so that means down, down, up, down, down, up, down, down, up, and I use a random number, so eventually it will go down. And the important thing is I use yield, because I need a generator here. Yield is something you can iterate over, every time you iterate, you get a new value. So if there's no new value, it happens, so I ask for time to have a new value, no value yet, I just yield none. This will cause to be updated. Otherwise, I give the value. The value is 10,000, 1,000, 1,000 months, and so on. And if I'm less than a little bit, it's just a mark that this would be something more involved that actually checks for the value of Fortran. And this would be the plot, and you see here you see a lot of familiar things. You make a new plot, figure on this explicit figure, add subplots, a little bit different API, but it's the same thing. We have X, there's a counter, we have X and Y, which is just at least this one element, the plot is one element, you will see anything, because this is the okay. And then I say show me your graph, and you see now you see a lot of familiar, I have the semi-log Y, so the Y axis is semi-log already, and my type, my label, my Y labels, it is much more. And this is an important thing, the update function. The update function prints out something, and I just append to a list. Here, the list is much better than that, by the way, because you want to grow it over time. And then I just append the counter, so this X gets longer, step one. And then the Y, this would be the Y value, which would be one value. I want to see all this possible. And then I make a new plot. You could also update the values here, decide to make a new plot, which rescales everything automatically. There's a small problem with this. If you have a very long one with a lot of thousand steps, that will crash. But this one is fine. Then you need to update and you need to rescale yourself. Now return this line, I get back. It's again called code update here for update goes. You could have written code. So this will be called and this will be updated. So what happens? This guy produces values. You here, yield value, and this value will end up here, and so matplotlib is taking the value from one of my functions and hands it over to the other function every second when I need to. That's it. So I write a function that does something, and matplotlib handles data thing. Because this is the same principle that we apply no matter what. Okay, you can totally change this plotting here, use all merge, make animation and annotations, and use the mathematical formulas and anything here. Yeah? And then you just get the value and based on the value you change the graph, and that's plus 3, you have a second depth plot. So this would be a basic animation, and you can see you can do fancy stuff. This is something you do right in half an hour, that takes you time. But this is the kind of blueprint, and you just need to plug in your own data producer, so you get to change this to something you can iterate over that gives you the value. There are many different technologies, you can generate those, one of them you can use just one iterator, or just know the list of this. And you need a consumer, which is this guy who actually made it. And I decided to make a class out of it, because it's a bit nice. You can also write this in functions using global objects, but it's not this. I was talking fast. Time's up. I'm still around for questions. If you have questions, to ask questions. Otherwise, I hope you got something out of it and managed to at least type a little bit and play a little bit around. Matplotlib is very big, has a lot of features, and you can spend a whole week doing all exercises. But I think you get the kind of feeling how it works, and you have the basics. And from there, you go to the gallery, you download whatever it looks like you want to process, and then modify it if you have something. And you always find the information examples. Most of them are sort of used global, which I would like, but yeah, it is also looking the same thing. Here's a bit more object on the classes, which as soon as you know how to ask. Okay. Thank you very much. If you have more questions, we can do questions after. Otherwise.